Jema. So it's Mahakumbh going on, and people have requested for something about Mahakumbh now, as I was mentioning in the Hindi talk also on Garuda, which is one of the stories associated. That, well, there is a tendency, and a beautiful tendency in India, to link certain events with deeper spiritual significance. It's not necessary that they are historically connected. For example, it's not necessary that actually when the Amrit drop fell, then people decided, let's have Mahakumbh Mela and Kumbh Mela and drink it. No. But they have been connected in such a way, because in India we weave from the spiritual to the material all the layers in a single storyline. One classic example is Bhagavatam. That's why it is said, you know, when Shri Krishna is leaving the physical body, so Uddhava is saying, what now, where will we go? If when you go away, he says, I am putting myself fully in Bhagavatam. You see, these stories contain all layers, and Shubhendu says that Srimad Bhagavat Puran is very deeply mystic, and Mother has also confirmed it. And that's when we look at Savitri, their life story, together, what it means, but that's a different subject altogether. So as the story goes, so rest of the details about, you know, when it started, as I was sharing, most likely the, like when basically Shankaracharya started this, and obviously he saw that there was some kind of threat he perceived to the Hindu, you know, because there have been attacks even earlier. If you see even Mahabharata or beyond that, the Yavans, the Huns, the Kushans, they have been attacking at different points of time, the Greeks, and then of course the Muslim invaders. So one of them was that organized the Hindus. And he did, whether one agrees to his philosophy or not, I mean, I don't and many may not, but one good thing was he organized the Hindus. That's to his credit. So one of the ways of organizing at a very mundane level, I'm not talking of a deeper organization, at a very mundane level, this organization took the form of a Mela. And Melas were anyways always in India collective gatherings where people brought different things from different places. It was a point of cultural exchange programs. Today we use sophisticated word, cultural exchange. But Melas were the first natural cultural exchange programs. And I remember some of us may have gone to the Melas fair. Now we have trade fair. So people would spring from different places and we would buy it. And there's a lot of joy. There would be some folk dances, some folk music. So that's what Mela is, where it's a confluence, not only of celestial events, that's a different part. Well, in time, space, there are special moments when, you know, certain energies do gather. That's a science in its own right, and that's wonderful. Also, the gathering of people around a central point, it's a collective gathering of mammoth dimension. All gathering with this idea of moksha, at least majority of them, maybe most of them. And then each one is bringing his own spiritual energy. But again, we should be very careful what spiritual part is, as an aside, because recently I saw a video. So in the video, it was one of the sadhus is lying on fire. And, you know, so there was a remark. He could make friends with fire. So I spontaneously said, what a waste of tapasya. He could have made friends with the divine and become Arjun. I mean, in the sense, it's good. Well, all possibilities are there, and it's a miracle, without a doubt. A miracle in the sense you understand the science. But actually, if you look at yoga, is to make friends with the divine. There can be nothing greater than that. So we should not mix up certain occult capacities, siddhis, powers with the real spirituality which begins beyond the frontiers of the occult. So this, as an Indian, we must understand the difference between occult and the spiritual, just as we must understand the difference between yoga as it is understood today is a set of exercises, and the real yoga, which is union with the divine. But that's a different subject. So all this, of course, is one part of it. Collective gathering, collective atmosphere does have a value, without a doubt, and that value can remain in that area for a long time, and that's why people keep coming. This Mahakumbh is one part, Kumbh Mela is another. Then regularly people come at that area. It was a way of creating an energy kshetra. So Prayag is known to be a very powerful energy kshetra. And as the story goes, that there is one of the legends associated is Ganga, Yamuna and Saraswati. So this legend, the meaning is very simple and clear. So Yamuna is the restless, turbulent nature. And Ganga is the Soumya nature. It's coming through the Jata of Shiva. Whereas Yamuna comes from the dark worlds. Not dark worlds, but Yama. So it's very interesting. Yama's sister, Yami. That's how she is sent to earth. So if you see, it is a power which again of the higher nature which has come to the lower nature. And it has a pact with the forces of darkness, Yama, restrainer, who doesn't allow you to go beyond a point. So Yamuna is that. Whereas Ganga is Mukshadayini. It's just the opposite. So Yamuna binds us to Yama. And Yama is very kind to those who, because she is his sister. So that's how the Bhai Dooj started. That, she one day called Yama. She's now earth, on earth. So she was very troubled by the distress of people dying on earth. So she asks her brother that I'll talk to my brother. People tell her, he's your bro. Why don't you tell him? So one day she calls Yama, please come, be my guest. So he comes. And she does a lot of khatirdari, takes good care. And at the end, brother says, what can I do for you? He says, people on earth, they die like this. It's a very sad story. I have to bear it. You are up there. You don't care. But I am now earthbound. I have to bear this sorrow. So what do I do? So he says, okay, see, I can't take away death from earth. But whenever a girl Tai does this Bhai Phota or Bhai Dooj, on this particular day when I have come, there is a cyclic repetition of celestial event, then I'll spare. If she prays for her brother, I'm going to spare. So you see, it is just the opposite of Rakshabandhan. In Rakshabandhan, the Bhai takes that I'll protect. Whereas in Bhai Dooj, it is the girl or the sister who prays for the brother. That's how the whole tilak goes, all that story, which is very interesting from a cultural point of view. But also Yami, Yamuna, which is a dark nature, how she has fallen. And Yam itself is son of Surya and Chaya. So again, the ignorant, the cast away son, and then the Yamuna, which is that nature of Yama. And if Yama is the being, Yamuna is the nature, which is fallen and accursed. That's why Krishna is dancing at the shores of Yamuna. And when Krishna is going, Yamuna is in spate. And she's trying to touch feet. It's literally the symbol that lower nature is seeking redemption, touching the feet of the Lord. Because it knows that, well, only he can redeem me. My bro cannot do much. But only he can redeem me. And it's the touch of the divine grace. So the float at the Yamuna, all this is a very beautiful story. But Ganga is on the other hand. Ganga also is in relation with death. But what is the relation? If the dead is put into Ganga, he goes to moksha. He doesn't, she releases spontaneously the pash of death. So I'm not talking of whether one should do this or not, but I'm just saying the story has a very interesting dimension, because these are all symbolic. Ganga is higher nature, which comes from the home of the gods. She is born from the heart of Vishnu when he observes the dance of Shiva, and Brahmaji holds it in his kamandalu. And then there is tapasya on earth, Sagar and the children, and that's how Ganga comes. So if you really look at Ganga, she contains the power of all the three gods, Trimurti, Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva. And she comes as a result of tremendous tapasya on earth. So she is coming, and she is coming with such a veg, such a force that earth cannot bear that power of purity. So Shiva has to bear it. He becomes Gangadhara. And just as he is Neelakanta, he also Gangadhara. And then the Ganga comes and goes into Patal, because she has come to redeem. Right there she goes. And there she redeems all the children of Sagar. That's another very fascinating story. Children of Sagar are all errant energy, deviant energies, which have to find that horse of the sacrifice. The horse which, the power that comes from tapasya, they have to find, but they are very arrogant. So they go and start saying, oh, this horse is mine. We are going to take it away. And they start, humiliating Kapil Muni, and then he opens his eyes and they are all gone. So arrogance is so dangerous, and you can't drag these powers just by force. And then, of course, we know the story of the other, I'm forgetting one more person who does the tapasya, and finally Bhagirath comes and the tapasya continues across three generations and finally Ganga comes. So Ganga is the power that redeems, quite opposite to Yamuna. So when two are meeting, but that's not enough. So there is a third river, which is Saraswati. Now Saraswati, again we have this civilization, the Aryan civilization developing around the river Saraswati. There was a real river Saraswati, and there is a lot of discussion and debate on this. Typically, the typical Western interpretation to justify the Aryan migration, they located Saraswati somewhere in Iran, distorting the name, etc. Sarsati or something like that, and they distorted it. Now there is archaeological evidence that there was a real Saraswati, not only that, NASA satellite, that there is an undercurrent of river. So that is exactly where the Aryan civilization developed. But Saraswati, the waters of Saraswati, if you look at, go back to the Vedic time. So just as Ganga is the water that purifies, and Yamuna is another kind of water, the energies which have become darkened and old, the power of Saraswati is both to liberate, to create. She is regarded as a great goddess. There are so many hymns attributed to Saraswati and the waters which flow from her. All these waters were originally divine energies. And this divine energy, the power of Saraswati, she can recreate. So it's not enough to redeem, she can rebuild things. So Saraswati, Ganga and Yamuna represented in the human system as the three subtle nadis. What are the three subtle nadis? That is Ida, Pingala, the right, the left, and the Sushmana. So these two are running alternately. We can experience it. Turn to the right, turn to the left, your thoughts begin to change. And you know, at different time and different, both nostrils, they don't work together. It's very interesting. You can see and you know, one works, then other works alternately. Means it's open, so air is entering passively, but there is a little bit of active movement. Now, this alternating movement, just as in our life we see this alternating movement between light and dark, when Saraswati awakens, she is the river. When she joins both of them, then she harmonizes. And that's when we can taste the nectar of immortality. So this confluence is an inner confluence. This there in Sri Aurobindo's writing, just as a footnote, that Ganga, Yamuna, Saraswati is a mystic symbol. I'm forgetting the exact word. He says how in India, parables and legends, they hid the deeper symbol because they didn't want to give it to the person who was not ready, not adhikari. So they covered it with symbols, mystic legends. And this one of the stories, that when a yogin awakens the Saraswati which is not yet streaming into the system, and this Saraswati begins to stream in the system, she rushes up and joins these two streams which are alternating. So when all the three join, the confluence, that's when one becomes the recipient of the nectar of immortality, which is what the Vedic rishis were deeply engaged with. What immortality is, we'll not speak about, because that's again a big subject. Other story is again connected with it, is the more well-known story is the Samudra Manthan. So see how they are interwoven. None of them have historically connection with the Kumbh Mela, but they've been woven. So everybody who goes automatically, turns to this story. And among many people, there will be few who will understand the mystic symbol, and they'll take home. So that's how India has transmitted a lot of truths through the tradition. So then the other stories of Sagar Manthan, again we see that just like in the story of Naga and Garud, for a while they come together. This is the story in Hindi we just finished. So they come together in a way. Nagas seek assistance of Garud to bring immortality. So here is the other way around. The Devas want immortality because Asuras have Sanjeevani Vidya, Sukracharya. So ultimately, after all, whatever they are doing, these fellows come up, and Devatas, after a while, they feel exhausted. They are defeated. So Lord Vishnu says, see, you will have to become humble and form a pact. Now this is like, you cannot completely deny these energies and realize, you have to take their, you know, some kind of collaboration has to be there. That's why there are people who dry these senses and sit like this. They cannot really realize this greater truth. So you have to bring them together. You have to put them on board. That look, we are striving for something higher. Will you come? So the asura gets attracted. Okay, fine. We have a possibility too. So the lower and the higher, they come together. The Vedas also speak, the fire is lit when the two woods, the lower and the higher, you have to keep them and then you have to light them. So same symbol we see. So asura and deva come together. So they have to do the churning of the ocean. So there are two or three oceans described in the Vedas. So one is the lower ocean, the higher ocean. The lower is the inconscient, the super conscient. The third ocean, which is beyond, which contains all this. So this, meanwhile, we'll limit to these two oceans. So they have to churn this ocean because there are many possibilities lying there. Among them is Amrit. So they come together. There is Vasuki. The story is very detailed. I am not going into it. Vasuki becomes the serpent, becomes the rope, and Mandrachal becomes the Mathani. You know what is Mathani in English? Yeah, with which you churn and
blender.
Okay, and Lord Vishnu becomes the tortoise, the avatar, on his stable. So on whom the Mandrachal will, otherwise the ocean itself began to sink. And then the gods and titans, titans are very arrogant. They say, we want to hold the mouth side of the Vasuki because we are the elder brothers. They are the elder brothers. So gods are intelligent. They say, okay, very ruefully. So they hold the mouth side, little realizing that as they begin to pull and push, lot of fumes come from Vasuki. So it's very difficult for them to handle it. And gods are on the tail side. Actually, asuras ask for this. Typical ego. I want to do this, you know. So, okay, fine. But then many things come. Lakshmiji comes. So all of them are eyeing on Lakshmi. But only Shri. So she goes to Shri Vishnu. So she becomes his consort. And then Dhanvantri comes. Dhanvantri will come a little later. But before that, all the various Uccheshava comes and Kaumudi, all these different gifts, they go to gods and the titans. Now the time is coming closer for the Amrit. Everybody is waiting. Like in yoga, you are waiting. Oh, when will the supramental realization take place? Mother has said, before dying, falsehood rises to its full swing. And she quotes the story of churning of the ocean. Rather, the disciple quotes and she says, yes. So what comes out suddenly is the poison. It's such a poison that can destroy the whole world. The gods and the asuras both run, leaving Vasuki halfway through. We can't handle this. And then Shiva, only somebody rooted in the eternal. It comes in yoga. None can reach heaven who has not passed through hell. So those who think it's a cakewalk, all is very beautiful. So many times they say, when you want to come to ashram or when you want to, you know, take up to yoga, sometimes very serious difficulties will come. And people say, straight away think that, I am turned to the mother, why this is happening to me? Precisely because you have to become now adhikari. Do you really stay with your choice, come what may? So it's like a choice, but very difficult because in that choice, many things happen, bitterness comes out. Shivindu quotes this also in Synthesis of Yoga. All kinds of bitterness, all kinds of challenges, problems. And there are people who give up, unfortunately. Like the gods and the titans. But the human soul labors, which is touched. So, then you are rooted in the eternal. You are holding on to the divine. Held by the divine. Ma. Then finally, this poison is taken up by the Shiva element in creation. That's how it becomes Neelakanta. And then once that is cleared, once you have gone through it, then the nectar comes. But hold on, that's the story say. There is now yet a test, very, very subtle, crafted test by the world maker himself. Not so easily the cup of immortality. So as it comes, Dhanvantri brings. So everybody is rushing. Now there is a fight. We got it. Me first, me first. And they begin to fight before they'll drink. It's meant to be shared. So then Vishnu Bhagavan come, wait, hold on. It's meant for both. Why are you fighting? I'll give it. So on one side are the gods, the other side asuras. Sit in a queue, row. So they sit, and as they are sitting, Vishnu Bhagavan assumes the form of the, he assumes the form of the most beautiful maiden ever. Even Shiva is, you know, jinko, he who whom nothing can bind, even he is filled with amorous feelings on seeing her. That's a later story. The birth of Dattatreya and many other things. So, he takes that form and he is moving through with the pot of nectar in one arm and water in the other arm. And all of them, the gods are eyeing on the pot. Kumbha. This another Kumbha. And the asuras are eyeing on the maiden. Kumbh is okay. Nectar we'll see later. But that is the charm of Vishnu. He has become. So even all that attracts, ultimately he has become all this. As he is going, there are two intelligent fellows in asuras sitting. Rahu Ketu. Rahu Ketu they become later. Rahu says, this is a trick going on. So he, you know, quietly shifts to the side of the devas. Now you see, you have to become an adhikari. There were ways and means he could have, you know, asked. But he does it deception. I am a deva. Take me in. So as he takes that side and few drops of nectar spill, because Vishnu is, Bhagavan is giving to the devas, very fascinating. Surya points out, no, he is an asura. There is the Sudarshan Chakra and his head goes. So it becomes the Rahu, the head, and this becomes Ketu. And because the sun has pointed out that light, that creator himself in a way, so they take a vengeance on the sun. Time to time obstructing his path. They are allowed to do so. That's another part of the story. Many interesting story. Even the path of the creator, these forces are allowed to obstruct. Shubhinda says, ancient of the days, only thou knowest, when will the siege be lifted? Because now, they are symbols of forces that are recognize what they want, but their will is not ready to receive it. They still want to do it by deception. They still want to do it by a show that I am a deva. But that's not enough. You have to truly be a deva. And what is a deva? A being who is constantly turned toward the light. So Rahu Ketu are those who recognize that this is it. No, we should want it. But they want it not by paying the price. So Shubhindu notes this story and says that, you know, what is the price to be paid? And he says it's the ego. Because what is the hallmark of Asura? Me, myself. Gigantic ego. Nothing else exists for him except he himself. And that's what even Rahu wants the Amrit for himself. He doesn't care. Why did the Devas want the Amrit? Because they have to govern this world. We have to go back to the roots. They want it because they have to govern the world and these forces are opposing and they are getting defeated. So they're because they are in a way immortal as well as the asuras, they don't die, they are tribal beings. This is a celestial story. But they get tired. That's the whole problem. That devas get tired, exhausted, and therefore asuras can temporarily capture their kingdom. Devas also can't be killed. So this nectar of immortality they want so that they can be rejuvenated, they can grow strong. And why do they want it? They go to Vishnu saying that we want to govern this world well. Each of the gods has a certain function. But these fellows keep coming and obstructing it. So the original impulse of the devas is this. But asuras, they want power. They are not interested in world governance. If we have the Amrit, we can extend our empire. And Shri Aurobindo says that's why even Bali, who is a very nice, very generous person. And many of these so-called asuras were very nice guys from the human standard. Still, they go back to Patal and they are denied the nectar of immortality. And he connects it actually with this story. He says, because like Nagas, they are very powerful beasts. Some of them also hold the money, very secret powers they hold within themselves. Yet they are not pure enough. Asura doesn't want purification process. So there are people who like McDonald's spirituality, $100 course, they will sign in, 5 days I want. It doesn't work like that. It's a lifetime of sadhana. People have spent lives. And we want it in 10-day course, 14-day course, and strangely, this is a typical asuric way. I want it quickly. If I go to ashram, what will I get? How soon? People often ask. And they are very disappointed. You say, maybe in this life, may not be. Oh, next life, let's enjoy. You're not ready. So the asura problem is that he is willing to labor, he is willing to put effort, but for the sake of the ego. He wants to become a great yogi, a great sadhak, to be recognized as somebody great, great devotee maybe, as a very generous man who did this, that. But the devas are concerned with the lok sangrahart, the world march, helping the divine will manifest in the world. I'm not touching upon, you know, they are far from perfect. And that's a different element of, that's Puranic stories which come later on. But this is the story where the devas are basically devas in the true sense. They are beings of light who are benevolent, who want earth to progress, who want mankind to progress. They fill mankind with beautiful, noble aspirations. Asuras are those who defeat them. Sometimes, not always. But they definitely give a good fight. And then what they do, they cover up. So you have faith in the morning, doubt at night. You feel happy for some time, then depression for some time, because these asuras attack. And the nectar of immortality frees you from this tendency. Not that you don't get attacks. They will attack. But because you have tasted the, you are tasting the nectar of immortality, therefore you bounce back like this. It rejuvenates you. It strengthens you. And that's what one can actually see in sadhana. There are phases, beginning, where you may go through disappointment senses and you feel, oh my God, all kinds of feelings may come. Fallen, outcast, all this. Am I really meant for, wretched? Various feelings may come. And you take long time to bounce back when you have gone through a dip. But after a point, you get up like this and walk. Because deep within you are connected with her who holds the cup of immortality for us. When we fall and life seems very dark, all that we need to do is to lie down in mother's lap. She has made it very easy for us. Not all this journey. And she just drops a few drops. Like when we were children, we had abdominal pain. I remember the standard medicine was gripe water. I don't know now anybody else. Gripe water. Every home, they used to keep gripe water. Gripe. So when you have griping pain, you give few drops. I myself say it used to work. I mean, it had a medicinal thing. And you take gripe water and the child, the baby is very fine and he's relieved and goes to sleep. So when we have our inner gripes, so nectar of immortality is our mother's love, is our gripe water. So that's why I was saying today, I wrote this in the prayer also. It's okay to take a bath in the confluence of three rivers and the deep mystic symbol and all. But the simplest of all is to take a bath in the mother's love. And that's what the mother would do. Whenever somebody came, she would say, I gave him the bath of the Lord. These are mother's words. He was so restless. If I mention the name, people will jump. Well, yes. When one of the long back, I think first Prime Minister of India. So he came, says he was so restless. I gave him a bath of the Lord. Be quiet. So she would say, I often give to all the bath of the Lord. What is the bath of the Lord? It is mother's love. More powerful than the Ganga. More powerful than Saraswati. More powerful than anything, more powerful than the nectar of immortality. Because while immortalizing nectar can make us rejuvenate our energies to move further, but the power of divine love transforms. Ganga purifies, redeems. The nectar of immortality makes us, you know, move on with renewed energy. But divine love transforms. So this is the story of Triveni and the Samudra Manthan, Sagar Manthan, churning of the ocean. Jai Ma.